Mental illness is epidemic in America, and the problem is spreading worldwide. It's time for decisive action, because the battle for the mind is part of a much larger war being waged between good and evil, with you as the prize. Welcome to Simple Solutions with Christian psychiatrist and author Dr. Timothy Jennings. For the next hour, we'll uncover Bible-based weapons for fighting destructive feelings and resolving inner conflicts. Dr. Jennings wants to arm you with the tools necessary for achieving emotional and mental stability as you strengthen your relationship with God. We'll open the phone lines for your questions in just a moment. I'm your Simple Solutions host, Charles Mills.
Give me liberty or give me a divorce. Patrick Henry didn't have relationships in mind when he penned his version of those words, but they're still true. Liberty is that white elephant sitting in the room of every marriage. No one discusses it, but everyone needs it. Let's talk with Dr. Timothy Jennings about life, liberty, and the pursuit of true happiness. Dr. Jennings, what part of liberty do we as human beings seem to fail to understand?
Well, I think it has to do with the internal tension that we all strive with in our hearts because of our first fallen state and God's grace working on our hearts. We have a competition in our hearts between two motives, the motive to love other people and the motive to protect ourselves. And based on our fears and insecurities, not wanting to get hurt, not wanting to get abandoned, not wanting to get rejected, not wanting to take advantage of, wanting to be loved, wanting to be cared for, those insecurity motives will often cause us to reach out and try to control the object of our love. But the problem is when we control, we destroy love. What we don't understand is that love requires freedom.
Well, okay, now let's get into the nitty-gritty of this thing. I want to talk about myself here a little bit. When it comes to my wife, I want to make sure that she is protected, cared for, nurtured, fed. Am I being controlling when I want to just really be that involved with her in her world?
It depends. You absolutely could be. It could be what you described there could be very destructive and unhealthy. It could be very
really?
Healthy and loving. It depends on the circumstances. I want to love my wife and provide for her. Therefore, I'm going to keep her at home and I'm going to provide for her and I'm going to go to work and I'm going to forbid her from getting a job and she's not going to contribute. She's going to stay home and have kids and work in the kitchen because I'm going to provide for my wife. It's my duty and I want to make sure she's protected and cared for. I'm not going to let her leave the home without me. I'm not going to let her have friends without me. I'm not going to let her talk to people that I don't know because I want to protect her from harm and from exploitation. You see, it depends on how it's implemented. What you said could be beautiful, it also depends on what the wife wants. The wife might have an autonomous heart where she wants to stand on her own 2 feet. Imagine this from a parent-child relationship. We want to protect our children, and we don't want to see them hurt and injured. And so as they're learning, moving from crawling to walking, and they're learning to toddle and stand on their own 2 feet, we couldn't possibly stand to see them injured. So we want to protect them. So we pick them up and carry them everywhere, and we never set them down. Mm-hmm. Are we loving them or are we hurting them? We're hurting them. We're restraining their growth. And so this idea that I want to love my spouse can be turned into this perverted thing where we actually control the person and clip their wings and prevent them from actually becoming and developing to the full stature that God would have them develop. So I would have to say that freedom and the principle of love seeks what's in the best interest of the other person. So you'd have to seek what your wife's goals are, what her dreams are, what her desires, what her ambitions, what her aspirations are, and then you seek to support her in that rather than coming with your agenda. Well, if I'm going to be a loving husband, I'm going to provide, I'm going to protect, I'm going to do these things, I'm going to implement this as my duty and my plan upon my wife. That would not be very loving at all.
Now, should a husband then go to his wife? Maybe they just got married or they're thinking about getting married. You talk a lot about what we should do before the wedding ceremony in relationships. Should part of the conversations that a husband-to-be has with his wife-to-be, something like, you know, honey, I love you, but I want you to have freedom. What do you want to accomplish in life? Is that a legitimate question to ask a wife?
There's no question about it. And one of the things that actually can cause cause tension as people approach marriage is the fear of losing their individuality, their autonomy, their ability to fulfill their dreams and aspirations. We are all given by God our own individuality, our own identity, our own ability to think and reason, but we also have dreams and goals and aspirations. And a loving relationship seeks to promote those for both parties. But oftentimes, there are compromises to be made in our Western society. Both men and women often have careers now, and sometimes decisions have to be made when a job offer comes. Do we go to this city for wife's career? Do we go to the city for husband's career? Those decisions sometimes have to be made. Are we gonna? Is the wife gonna stay home and teach to raise the kids? Is she gonna we're gonna farm the kids out to a daycare for 6 weeks after birth? I mean, what are we gonna do? I mean, these decisions, and I'm not saying there's a right or wrong here. I'm saying that the right thing is for there to be an understanding, a mutual agreed upon plan that the two implement together, where there's a freedom, not an imposition of one's will over the will of the other.
Should a couple then have all this resolved before they say I do? How can you possibly do that? I mean, you're not going to. Sometimes compromise takes years to develop, okay? But how is a husband and wife to be wanting to get married? They come upon, I want to live in China. I don't want to live in China. Should they decide where they're going to live before they get married?
This is where we move away from God's methods of love to the legalistic approach of let's set a whole bunch of rules and let's make a whole bunch of criteria that we have to abide by for the rest of our life. The principles of love are, hey, I'm always going to be here to seek your best interest and your happiness. And therefore, when certain opportunities or problems arise, we know that we will, because we have each other's interest number one in our hearts, that the answers that we both give are going to be seeking to uplift, build, and promote the well-being of the other. That's the kind of person you want to marry. You don't want to marry a person who has a me-focused orientation to life. Life is about me. The world should revolve around me. People are there to benefit me, or there are obstacles in my way that have to be removed because life is about me. Those type of people are not to be married. Because you will never have happiness with those type of people.
Yeah.
You need to marry somebody who has the ability to say, hey, while I have my dreams and aspirations, one of my dreams is to make you happy. And the other person's dream is to make you happy.
Yeah. Well, this is a pretty big load to put on the shoulder of most anyone, because we as human beings, and correct me if I'm wrong, Dr. Jennings, we as human beings tend to be me-oriented. This is a battle, I would think. Giving someone liberty is actually runs against the natural tendency of the human heart. Am I right?
Natural tendency since sin. It was not in the original design protocols. In the original design protocols, God created us in his image, and God is love, and love is not self-seeking. We were originally designed to seek the health and welfare of others first, and that's what you saw in the Garden of Eden before sin. After sin, however, we got infected with fear. Think about this. When you are afraid, when you're insecure, when you're terrified, what happens to your focus if you become very me-centered? Same thing happens when you're in significant pain. When you're in significant pain or afraid, it's very difficult to focus on the well-being of another. Conversely, when you are in those moments of true other-centered love, there is no experience of fear. Perfect love casts out fear. This is the internal battle we have. We are wired with fear and insecurity, and that drives us to watch out for ourselves and protect ourselves and seek to promote ourselves, because we don't trust, number one, God. We don't trust those around us. We actually have this built-in distrust where we expect people will hurt us, take advantage of us, and we won't get our fair shake in life. Life is unfair, so we're constantly looking to give ourselves the advantage over others to make sure life is fair for us. That's our natural inclinations since sin. And it's destructive to relationships. Relationships do not do well in that environment. Relationships do well in the environment of other-centered regard, care, and love, where we actually promote and respect the freedom of the other person.
Give me liberty or give me a divorce. Let's find out if that is actually a criteria for ending a relationship, the loss of liberty. We're here with Dr. Timothy Jennings. Our phone lines are open for your questions and comments. 800-775-4673. That's 800-775-4673. When we get back, I have a story that has to do with liberty and a dog. Stay tuned. Thank you.
Here's Dr. James Markham with your daily heartbeat.
Did you know that hypertension is sometimes called the silent killer? Hypertension or high blood pressure damages the body, and sometimes we don't even know this is occurring. What's happening is the blood's rushing through our body at very fast speeds. It can damage our heart, our blood vessels in the brain, or even blood vessels in our kidneys. This can lead to heart attacks and strokes and aneurysms and kidney disease. Some people don't even realize they have it. One of the things I want you today is get your blood pressure checked. A fancy device called a sphygmomanometer is used to check your blood pressure. One of the things we can do is lower our blood pressure. It might be by lowering our stress, but the first step in treating blood pressure is recognizing you have it. Get your blood pressure checked today.
If you'd like more information, go to heartwiseministries.org. That's heartwiseministries.org.
Flunking med school can be deadly.
Forceps? Those are forceps, aren't they? No, those sharp thingies over there, I think.
Flunking the test of life is unnecessary because the Discover Bible Course is a delightful, easy-to-use modern set of adult study guides for people just like you.
Wait, are we taking out the liver or that green thing over there?
Enroll in the free Discover Bible Course today to get to know the great physician that can heal all the hurts in your life. Why don't you give us a call and sign up for this series of lessons that will help you connect with Christ? Our toll-free number is 800-775-4673. That's 800-775-4673. Or you can sign up online at lifetalk.net.
Welcome back to Simple Solutions. I'm your host, Charles Mills. We're here with Dr. Timothy Jennings, Christian psychiatrist and author, and we're talking about liberty today. And Dr. Jennings, you said something that sparked a memory in my brain. You said that we are able, in moments of true love, to put ourselves aside and focus entirely on the other person. My wife and I were out for a nice afternoon walk not too long ago here in West Virginia. We walked by this house, and my wife was a little bit behind me taking pictures with her camera, and I was out in front. And from this house came this huge black dog. Scared me to death. When I first saw that dog, I was really frightened because it was growling and teeth were bared. And it started coming toward me, and I wanted to run. I started to run, as a matter of fact. And then the dog caught sight of my wife. And something changed in me. When that dog changed direction and started going toward my wife, all my fear, anxiety, all my feelings of self completely vanished. I started chasing the dog. Not the dog chasing me. I started chasing the dog. And I chased that dog and got its attention and drew it away from my wife. And I was willing to grab that dog with my bare hands to keep it away from my wife. Is that what we're talking about? If we have a real, true, compassionate love, the me goes away?
That's exactly. For greater love is no man that he give his life for a friend, the scripture says. This is how we know what love is, that Christ gave his life for us. We ought to give our life for each other. And it says in Hebrews that for the joy set before Christ, that he gave his life for us. And it was joy. And you see, the point is, if you thought that that animal was actually going to kill your wife, and you threw yourself in front of it and knew that your wife would be saved by that, you, even though you're being injured, will have joy knowing that you're saving her. And
absolutely,
that's what love
absolutely
is. Love is really caring about another more than ourselves. We are wired to be self-referenced because of sin. This is the defect. This is the core problem, fear and selfishness. Christ came to reverse that, to actually restore this perfection of godly love into the human species. That is what he is seeking to do. He did it in his own human journey on earth, ultimately, when he gave himself. No one can take my life. I will give it freely. And now he is the source of healing and salvation for us, that we can come through his grace to experience that kind of love for him and for others. And we've seen that in history where people have come to give their life and love for others.
Yeah. Now let's take that and narrow it down to a little more day-to-day operation between a husband and a wife, or somebody who is dating someone who is thinking in the future of their relationship. How would that type of commitment to another person reveal itself in a day-to-day environment, in what that person wants to do, in career moves, in the lifestyle they want to live? How much freedom should we give those? How much liberty should we allow, or how much liberty should we accept from other people as we go through that relationship?
And I'm going to tell you, it's not primarily, in my experience, the big decisions of what house we live in or what city we move to. Those are not usually the ones where most couples stumble and fall. Most couples, on some level, recognize that the big decisions like that, are we going to buy this house, we're going to move to this city, we're going to accept this job, affects the entire family. And so most families, the entire, you know, the husband and wife, consult together and make those decisions. Sometimes that doesn't happen, but that's the minority of cases. The majority of husband and wife relationships stumble on the small decisions, the little day-to-day decisions about respecting individuality and autonomy, walking in and taking, you know, the TV away and deciding just to put what you want on and instead of putting what the other person wants on, rather than giving the person their own TV if they want to watch it and let them watch what they want to watch. You see, you can watch
and television watching, it's a whole different program.
The subtle pressures of, you know, the dynamics of, let's say, the wife gets invited by one of her girlfriends to do an event. The husband doesn't want to go. Are you going to pressure the husband to go? Or are you going to give him the freedom to say, hey, this is an event. Love to have you there. But you know what? I'll love you just as much if you'd rather not go. I'd like to have you. Will there be punishment if the husband doesn't go? Or conversely, the other way around? Will there be a consequence? Will there be pouting? Will there be stomping? Will there be criticism? Will there be this undercurrent of resentment building in the heart if you don't do what your spouse wants you to do? Those are where most of the relationship breakdown is freedom, that we don't love our spouses with true other-centered love and say, you know what, I want your happiness more than mine. Well, it would mean a lot, and I'm inviting you to go with me to this thing. If you're going to be miserable there, I wouldn't want that. So, you know what, I'll love you just as much and be happy doing something else.
Now, let's take that thought and carry it down to the kids. Just how much liberty do you give those growing children? They're not as mature as adults are, and maybe that's not the right way of saying that because there's a lot of immature adults. But they haven't learned what adults usually have learned on the way. As a parent looking at a kid, wants to give that kid liberty because love requires liberty. Liberty requires love. They're both in there. How much liberty? How do you determine the liberty that you give to your teenage son or before?
You ask the question, how much liberty do you give? It's very simple. As absolutely much as they can handle. You give them as much as they can handle. I mean, I give lectures around the country. I tell the kids, I'll say, kids, I'm going to tell you a secret. Your parents have as their number one goal. Now, think this through, parents listening to us right now. Your parents have as their number one goal to parent you in such a way that one day they can quit parenting you.
That's true.
Isn't that the truth?
Absolutely.
And so what
yes,
does that mean? What that means is you have as a goal to set them free.
Yeah.
That's your goal. Yeah. And so you ask, well, how much freedom am I give them? As much as they can handle. So I tell the kids, so if you want more freedom, you want more independence, you want more autonomy, don't whine and complain and cry for it. All you have to do is show your parents that every responsibility that you currently have, you can fulfill without any difficulty. You do your homework without being told. You make your grades. You keep your room clean. You fulfill all your chores. You are where you're supposed to be, and you handle yourself maturely and competently with all the privileges that you currently have. And I promise you, your parents will give you more. Conversely, if you would rather have less freedom and have more direct instruction and governance and oversight from your parents, then don't do your homework, don't clean up your room, don't do your chores, don't follow up in the things you're supposed to do, and I promise you, your parents will give you more supervision.
A lot of kids want it both ways. They don't want to do their chores, and they want the freedom, and that just doesn't work, does it?
And sadly, far too many parents give children exactly that, and that is a prescription for disaster. I remember one father had a son who was in all types of trouble in high school. He was vandalizing, he was doing marijuana, he was smoking, he was doing all this kind of stuff, constantly in trouble. And as I was talking to him, I discovered that he never actually disciplined his son. At least not without his son's permission. You know, you won't be mad at daddy if daddy puts you in timeout, will you?
Wow.
This type
That's
of an approach.
That's kind of interesting. Yes,
you see?
Yeah,
well,
really.
There are many parents who actually, see, this is the fear. The parent has fear in the heart. I'm afraid my children won't love me. I'm afraid, and that fear of losing my children's love causes me to act in self-interest rather than in other-centered interest for my kid. I'm going to do what's good for my kid regardless of how my kid responds or feels or thinks, or I'm going to do what I think my kid wants so my kid will like me because I need to be liked by my kid. Which is it? See, love says, and I remember my mother very much, I'm not here to be your friend. I'm here to be your mother.
Yeah.
And mom would do things that I would get mad at her. I remember mom and dad both when sometimes, and I look back on it and I got disciplined and I'm so thankful they gave me the discipline. But I remember when I was being disciplined, I didn't like it and I was mad. You're the meanest mommy in the whole world, you know? And mothers and fathers who are very insecure and fear-centered can't tolerate that and therefore give freedom before the maturation level is developed to handle it. And when we give freedom before the ability to handle it is developed, it results in destruction.
It seems to me that a lot of parents do what you say there, that just give the liberty without getting the responsibility from their kids out of fear that the kid's not going to love them. But can we look a little deeper into that parent? Is that parent saying that if my child doesn't love me, it underscores what I really feel about myself, that I'm not worth loving?
Oh, of course. There's always those self-insecurity issues that are driving it, and that's how we come into this world. Absolutely. Yeah. And those things can be inflamed from the parent's own childhood experiences and what they've gone through prior. Of course. Mm-hmm.
Well, this is a complicated issue. The idea of giving liberty to someone you love, the sin. Now, when I say
why is it complicated?
Why is it complicated?
It's not complicated. It's pretty straightforward. There are certain principles. You violate them, the consequence. Liberty is a law. Let's just break it down. Liberty is a law. If you violate, just like gravity is a law.
Right.
Gravity is not complicated. You step off a building, you know what's going to happen. It's very straightforward.
Yep.
Now, you step off a 4-inch curb. Gravity does the same thing. The injury is slightly different because the deviation or violation is smaller. But gravity's not changing. It's very predictable. Liberty is this way as well. You violate liberty in a relationship. Number one, love is always damaged. Always damaged. Think about you're out with your spouse at a restaurant, and the waiter comes up and says, what would you like to drink? And you said, like a Coke, please. And your spouse looks to the waiter and says, he's not allowed to have Coke. You bring him water. Do you love her more? Or did love just get bruised?
Even though she did a very loving thing, because maybe the doctor said he shouldn't be drinking Coke, bad for his health.
But if she takes control and doesn't give you the freedom to do it yourself,
that's
do you
it.
Love
that's
her more
it.
Or do you?
No.
Love is bruised.
No, exactly.
Do you have a desire to? So number one, love is always damaged and will be eventually be destroyed. Number two, do you have a desire to get closer with her if she does that? Or do you want to get a table by yourself? No.
Table by in the next room.
Okay, so number two, when you violate liberty, a desire to rebel is instilled in the heart. And then if you don't act on that desire, if you don't reestablish your autonomy, if you don't say, hold on, wait a second, waitress, I want the Coke, and you look at your wife, I appreciate your attempts to try and give me a healthier lifestyle, but right now I'm nauseated and I want something to settle my stomach, I'm taking a Coke. Oh, okay. Thank you. See, that ability to reestablish. If you don't reestablish your autonomy, if you just succumb and you just drop your head, and number one, not only will love be destroyed, resentment will be built in your heart. If you don't get your freedom back, slowly over time, you actually surrender the ability to think and reason, and you lose your own identity and just become an empty shell of a person.
Well, we have a lot to talk about on this one with Dr. Timothy Jennings here on Simple Solutions. Website, comeandreason.com, comeandreason.com. You'll find a blog there and many, many resources that can help you live a healthier, happier life and also learn how to get your brain straightened around like we all need to do. Comeandreason.com. We'll be right back, so stay where you are.
This is Max McLean. Why do we need the Lord's mighty power in our life? Listen to the Bible from Ephesians 6. Put on the full armor of God so that you can take your stand against the devil's schemes. For our struggle is not against flesh and blood, but against the rulers, against the authorities, against the powers of this dark world, and against the spiritual forces of evil in the heavenly realms. Therefore, put on the full armor of God, so that when the day of evil comes, you may be able to stand your ground, and after you have done everything, to stand. From Ephesians 6. Listen to the Bible. It's great for the soul.
The Bible says that faith comes by hearing. Be able to hear the Word of God today and every day. To hear more, go to radiobible.org. That's radiobible.org.
In 1941, the USO was born to honor and comfort the men and women of our armed forces around the world. Men and women who have put our dreams and our futures above their own, who protect and defend the freedoms we hold so dear. And burning in every one of their hearts is a singular, undeniable desire to come home, to return to the ones they love, to realize their dreams, to be free and at peace. And so the USO will carry on, to touch their spirits, to comfort them, to remind them, to simply and heartfully thank them for the extraordinary gift they give us all. Wherever and whenever they go, until every brow is soothed and every hand is held, until every song is sung and every battle won, until everyone comes home. To find out more about the USO, visit us at uso.org.
Jesus said in John 14:27, "Peace I leave with you. My peace I give you. Do not let your hearts be troubled and do not be afraid." Do you long for that peace in your life? Let's return to Simple Solutions with Christian psychiatrist and author Dr. Timothy Jennings.
Welcome back to the program, Simple Solutions. I'm your host, Charles Mills. We're here with Christian psychiatrist and author, Dr. Timothy Jennings. And our phone lines are open if you have a question and comment on this topic of liberty and how much and how often and how to provide liberty to those you love. Because, Dr. Jennings, I'm thinking that liberty is not something you just wholeheartedly give out without some thought. You don't give liberty to a four-year-old child standing at the edge of a freeway. You don't give liberty to a teenager who has not shown responsibility and wants to stay out until 1 o'clock on Saturday night. There are times to withhold liberty, and I'm trying to get in my mind what the criteria is for you to provide liberty to the person that
actually
you are wanting to give liberty to.
The only reason we even have this question is because of sin on earth. I can tell you,
yes.
In God's universe, there is absolute freedom. And in the universe to come, after he makes all things new, there will be 100% freedom. Some have this other distorted view of God, that the reason we will have a safe universe in the future is because God is a great policeman in the sky, and he'll have angels with flaming swords at every corner like the Gestapo, keeping everyone in line. That is not true, because love could never exist in such a place. The reason it'll be such a wonderful future is because it will be populated only by people who love others more than themselves. And so it'll always be safe because everybody there would give their life for you, and you would give your life for everybody there. That's why heaven is going to be such a wonderful place. Here on earth right now, we are all infected with this terrible disease that some refer to as sin, fear, selfishness. We could call it survival of the fittest, me first, watching out for number one, a willingness to take advantage of others and exploit others for our own gratification or our own selfish need. That is destructive to others. It is also destructive to the person doing it. And therefore, loving people will reach out in love to put restraints on those who have not yet gained the capacity for self-governance, hoping for an opportunity that they will develop those capacities. Now, this happens on multiple levels. This happens on parents with children. It happens with doctors and patients. Psychiatrists will restrain a psychotic individual who has lost touch with reality, or get court approval to put them in a facility to, for what purpose? To punish, to inflict suffering upon, or for the primary purpose of restoring to them their capacities for self-governance and then set them free. That is the goal. And if psychiatrists had a magic pill that they could just give and restore a sanity and self-governance, then that's what they would do. They would never restrain someone. Likewise, as I'm so sure some of our listeners have had, they've had family members who've gotten Alzheimer's dementia. And as they've gotten demented, they've lost capacity for self-governance and some type of restraint. And then society will take people who've lost self-governance in ways that harm people criminally and will put them in a timeout, will take them out of society, will restrain them from interacting for a while to give those people time to rethink, to reevaluate, to develop some self-governance, give them oversight with a probation officer and all these other things, all designed to help to get them to be able to govern themselves and not act out to hurt others. But if they demonstrate they can't, eventually they either get life in prison or the death penalty, so where right. they can no longer hurt people. But the goal is not to take freedom away. The goal is to establish in each individual the capacity for self-governance so they can act freely out of a love and empathy-based motive for other people.
When we take these thoughts that you just gave us and let's move those into the marriage relationship, I would assume that it takes time for a husband and wife to come to the conclusion that their spouse is responsible enough for the liberties that they want to, you know, a wife says, I don't want my husband to go traveling in his business because, you know, he has an eye for the women.
And I would tell you, if anybody says that, they should have never married him in the first place.
Really?
That should not come up in a marriage. Seriously, that tells me that there was a failure to, in most circumstances, unless some injury happened, a brain injury, accident, automobile thing, some major thing happened, that primarily those types of things you just described happened because the work done beforehand was not done well to really know if the person you were marrying was qualified to be married to you.
Mm-hmm. And if a couple find themselves not trusting each other after marriage, okay, that should be an indication that what? What should they do? What's the next step they should take at that point? They're married, but they don't trust each other.
It's an indication that something is wrong in their relationship, which means there's something wrong in them. See, healthy relationships require healthy people.
Yeah.
If you're not a healthy person, it doesn't matter who you get into a relationship with. You can't have a healthy relationship if you're not a healthy person. Doesn't matter how healthy the other person is. If you're not a healthy person, a person who is able to self-restrain, process through a difficult circumstance, think clearly, love other people, deny yourself personal gratification for the benefit of another person, to be reasonable and hear another person out, be able to understand where another person is coming from, rather than, you know, to be able to admit when you've made a mistake, to ask for forgiveness, to own your own shortcomings. This is maturity, a mature person. If you don't have those abilities, then any relationship you get in will be unhealthy because you bring your own childlike ways of functioning to those relationships. So you asked about distrust in a relationship. Distrust can happen in a relationship because you're in a relationship with somebody who is actually untrustworthy. They are untrustworthy, and there's two types of untrustworthiness. There's the untrustworthiness of somebody like Saddam Hussein or Osama bin Laden who actually has in their heart to do evil. They don't like you, and they actually want to hurt you. You can't trust that person. But there's another type of untrustworthiness, which is really the primary type that occurs in most relationships, and that's the untrustworthiness of immaturity. You have a five-year-old child, and your child says, hey, I'll be glad to take your paycheck to the bank for you. Now, you've got a good kid. Your kid's a loving kid. There's no problem with the kid. And you trust the kid as far as you can trust a five-year-old, but you're not going to trust them with your paycheck, not because they have any evil in their heart to do harm. They want to do good, but they don't have the maturity to handle responsibility. Now, this is the primary reason that distrust happens in relationships. Most people who cheat on their spouse don't do it with the intent of, I hate my spouse and I want to hurt them, so I'm going to go out and I'm going to cheat so I can hurt my spouse. That's not the reason it usually happens. Sometimes that can be a revenge reason once the person who is initially cheated, that can happen. But that's not the primary reason most people cheat. Most people cheat because they don't have the maturity to self-govern. They get in a situation and they get tempted and they have powerful emotions for somebody and they don't have the ability to deal with those emotions well. child, and so they're like that child. They're too mature, and they can't be trusted for those reasons. And afterwards, they feel remorse. They feel regret. They didn't. I never meant to hurt my spouse. I never meant to do anything. I'm sorry. I'll never do it again. And they promise to never do it again. And they do it again. Why? Not because they intend to do it again, because they still aren't mature enough to handle the responsibility of a spouse. So one reason for not trusting in a relationship is you're married to somebody who can't be trusted. But there's another reason trust doesn't exist in a relationship, and that is you have problems trusting. You don't trust people. You've been burned in the past. You've been exploited. Maybe you were molested as a kid. Maybe your parents abandoned you. Maybe you had a traumatic experience. Whatever. You've had burns in the past, and you just expect, anticipate, and project onto every relationship that they're going to hurt you. Just give them time. They're going to take advantage. They're going to cheat. They're going to do something. And so you never trust because there's some defect in your capacity to trust. So broken trust can happen because of untrustworthiness or a broken ability to trust other people. Either way, without trust in that relationship, love can't grow.
If there's someone listening to the program right now who says, well, Dr. Jennings just described me. I have real trust issues here. I have had a lot of the problems that he just mentioned on the air. Is the ability to trust something that is self-taught or something that is taught to you by other people? How do you do that? How's it come into your heart?
Well, before I even answer that question, I want to say that the person who has the fear and insecurity and doubt, often that leads to what we're talking about today, violations of freedom. I don't trust them, so then I'm going to need to control them. I'm going to need to watch them. Yeah. I'm that jealous spouse that won't, you know, that's always seeing a threat wherever when there's no threat. I'm checking emails, checking phones, checking letters, always checking behind because I fear. It's just a matter of time. And so they limit. Oh, I don't want you going there. I don't want you going here. I don't want you taking this trip. I don't want you going to play golf with that person. I don't want you. Why do you all this pressure and control? Because the person has an inability to trust. Now, that inability to trust, like I said, could be there because of a previous experience. You come there. Or if the person that the husband says already cheated, then that can instill that fear and insecurity, and the wife then becomes, who never was controlling, very controlling, because now she's been burned and she's afraid he'll cheat again, and then there's no longer freedom in the relationship. Back to your question about if you're that person who's had a difficult time to trust, where do you learn trust? Trust is learned by experience. You can only trust someone if you know them and they've demonstrated trustworthiness over time. And this is the reason for the dating process. The dating process is the process, not primary. It's never the process of trying to get a person to like you. It's never that. Never. Dating process is the process of allowing the other person to reveal themselves to you. And it's not primarily how they treat you that you should be looking at. That's part of it. That's a big piece of it. But you should be expanding your assessment. How do they treat everyone else that I'm aware of? How do they treat their mom, their dad, their brother, their sister, their friends, their coworkers? How do they treat the stranger in the store? How do they treat people? Let them show themselves to me. If every time you're with them and the brother calls, the sister calls, the cousin calls, and the person you're with is making up excuses and lying to them on the phone to so they don't have to go over and see him or whatever, you don't go, well, he's never lied to me. You go, if he's lying to his cousin, his sister, his brother, it's just a matter of time till he lies to me.
Yeah.
And you say, that person can't be trusted. He's showing me by his. And here's a classic one. I can't tell you how many people get involved in it with somebody who's already married person having an affair with somebody who's married, and they divorce their spouse and then marry each other. Those relationships never have trust because by the very foundation of them, the very foundation of those relationships are built on the premise that you'll cheat on your spouse. Yeah. That's how we came together. Because neither one of us can keep our promises, our vows, our loyalties. We lie. We cheat. That's who we are by behavior. So those relationships are infected with fear and insecurity.
I actually heard someone, a married couple, talking about purity before marriage. And the comment was that if my husband or if my wife had slept around in their youth, they have demonstrated an inability to be faithful to me after marriage. Because they say I do does not necessarily mean they will. So there's actually a carryover of this untrustworthiness.
And that's poppycock, by the way. That's poppycock.
It is poppycock. Tell me why it's poppycock.
Because the question is not what the person did prior, some previous point in their life. Because every one of us are sinners, and every one of us have stuff if you historical facts of mistakes and shortcomings we've made, every one of us. The question is, what is the condition of the heart today? Has the person matured, grown up, been converted, been transformed, been regenerated, been renewed? Have they been we can go in this after the break and explore it more, but I think we need to.
Absolutely. This is fantastic. 800-775-4673. 800-775-4673 is our phone number if you have a question or comment for Dr. Jennings. 800-775-4673. Stay tuned.
Is your life stuck in fast forward? Are you doing more and enjoying less? Do you feel stressed out and tired?
If so, help is here. Speaker, pastor, and author Carl Hafner points the way to relief for the stressed out, worn out, and burned out. With humor and wisdom, Carl Hafner shows in his new book, Soul Matters, that it's possible to live a sane and balanced life in a world gone mad. But there's a catch. You must learn to cheat the lesser gods and clamor for your attention in order to honor the one true God. Find rest for your weary soul. Pick up a copy of Carl Hafner's book, Soul Matters, today. To get a copy, visit www.pacificpress.com or call 1-800-765-6955.
I had no idea my daughter was taking drugs.
I started smoking pot when I was 14.
At 15, I was on the streets doing whatever I had to do.
My parents never really knew where I was. They thought they did.
Whatever it was he was doing, he didn't want me to know. He didn't want anybody in the family to know.
I already did alcohol and I already knew what pot was about, so why not do cocaine?
I started smoking crack at 15.
I took LSD 2-3 times a week.
When my family found out I was on drugs, they were just horrified.
He was not raised to be brought home in handcuffs.
And I remember my mother saying to me, "You're going to die if you don't get help." I wanted to have my family back. And that's when my mother found Narcanon.
If you or someone you love has a drug or alcohol problem, call Narcanon today at 1-800-468-6933 or visit us at www.stopaddiction.com.
We are talking about liberty today and how we should be very careful about giving it and what we should expect when we want it. This is a good conversation with Dr. Timothy Jennings, Christian psychiatrist and author. Our phone lines are open if you have a question or comment on this thing. If you want to wade in, you're just welcome to do that. 800-775-4673 is our phone number. Okay, Dr. Jennings, before the break, we were talking about how much of the past, or how much should the past, the person, what the person has done in the past, weigh on our decision to give them liberty in our marriage, or even make marriage possible with that person?
Okay, those are two totally different sets questions. The past has no bearing on whether you give liberty if you want love in your marriage. If you want love in your marriage, you give liberty, period. If you want love to be destroyed in your marriage, you take freedom away. It's black and white. I mean, when we're talking marriage partnership here, this is supposed to be between two equal, mature adult beings. If you want to have a healthy love relationship, it requires just like your physical health requires oxygen, requires water, hydration, requires food. A healthy relationship requires freedom, autonomy, liberty. If you take it away, you'll destroy it in a marriage relationship. That was the first question. But you asked the second question. How much should the past bear on my decision to get involved with this person?
Okay.
And how much will the past impact the current relationship and whether we should move it forward? And that's the question would be, yes. What portion of the past do we take into consideration? The portion of the past that is actually alive and active today.
Okay. All right.
So,
in other words, don't hold past it. If they stop doing it, then you shouldn't hold against them. In other words,
it's not even just the behavior. It's the heart that led to the behavior that you're looking at. Mm. Jesus said, if you committed, you say if you commit adultery, you commit sin. I say if you look at a woman with lust in your heart. The real question is, has the person who's made mistakes somewhere in the past during their developmental years, during their immature years, during their Christian walk, growth, and at some point come to a conversion experience, at some point come to conviction, at some point come to repentance, and through God's grace experience transformation such that they have moved from a self-oriented approach to life to an other-oriented approach to life, and they demonstrate capacity for self-governance and responsible decision making. And if they demonstrate that, and you look back and say, yeah, but when they were 15 to 17 or 15 to 21 or 21 to 25 or whatever, sometime in the past, you find that they had all those problems going on, but it's not a problem now, then that's historical irrelevancies to the present circumstance. David, when this goes to spiritual issues too. When David in the Bible comes up in the judgment, Satan will be there to say, well, he committed adultery, murdered Uriah, blah, blah, blah. The Lord stands up and says, you know what? Those are historical facts, but they're not relevant because David has a new heart and a right spirit. He's been changed in the inner man. Sins are not erased out of the records of history, but sinfulness was erased out of David's heart, and he's pure in heart now. And that's the question you have to ask. Is the person that I'm thinking about marrying, through God's grace, had evil, selfishness, fear, insecurity, so forth, be erased out of the heart so they have the capacity to love others now and really care about others? Or are they still this very fierce, self-oriented person? One other caveat is mistakes from the past can have other real-life consequences that need to be considered other than the heart attitude. And that would be, well, they did some of these things and now they have HIV. That needs to be considered. They've done these things. They've had a different type of sexual transmitted disease that impairs their ability to have children. They're infertile now. And you want to have kids. That should be considered. Okay, so there are other real-life consequences, or maybe they have kids from, they're married and divorced, got kids, or they've never been married, got kids, all these types of things from the past. They may have a good heart, pure heart, right spirit, they're trustworthy, but they have other issues of reality that would still maybe impact whether you would find them qualified for where your future is going and what you want in a marriage partner. So as long as it's active in the present, it needs to be considered. If it's just a historical fact that has no active activity in the present, then it really is not germane to the decision making. The decision making is, who is this person now, and who can I expect them to be as we move forward?
This is very, very encouraging, I know, to a lot of our listeners right now. I want you to go over this one more time with us, Dr. Jennings. How does God look at us right now? How does he look at our past sins? Because a lot of people say, God can't possibly love me because, when I was a teenager, when I was a young man, when I was a young woman, I did these terrible things. God can't possibly love me. What is your answer to that person?
A metaphor I give that seems to really help people get this clear in their mind is, imagine that you are on a church board nominating the new children's department leader for your church, and a name comes up and somebody says, hey, wait, before you accept this person for this position, you need to know when they were 5 years old, they had a really bad stomach infection and had bad diarrhea and bad vomiting all over their mother's new carpet and mother's new furniture. Then what would you do if you're on the board? You're going to go, why are you telling us this? Well, and the person goes with all seriousness, because it was gross and disgusting. Okay, and you hear them. Then you're going to go, okay, are you saying they're sick now? Do they have this problem now, vomiting? Oh, no, they're quite healthy now. Well, then it really is irrelevant, isn't it? You see, the question that God has is not, have we had some gross and horrible activities in our historic past. That is not the question. It's never the question. The question is, what is the condition of the heart today? Have we been reborn? Have we been renewed? Have we been like David, become a man after God's own heart? Have we been transformed by God's grace? And if so, we can look back and say, oh yeah, man, that was a gross and ugly time in my life. Just like you could say if you were that person who they're talking about. Yeah, man. Oh yeah, I remember that infection when I was 5. That was a horrible time. That was pretty disgusting, gross. Sure am glad I'm not sick anymore. Praise the Lord for that. That's the way that God looks at us. He looks at us like a physician looks at a sick patient. And a physician looking at a person coming into the emergency room who's been in a car accident or some sickness doesn't look at them with disgust. He looks at the patient with absolute compassion and anticipation of intervention to bring healing and restoration. That's how God looks at every one of us, with compassion and the knowledge that he knows that if we cooperate with him and let him, he can fix us, he can heal us, he can restore us to eternal perfection. That's how he sees us.
Oh, my. And it just sounds like you're saying that God is just waiting to provide us with a fresh set of liberties? Is that what you're saying? Does God want to give us that liberty?
We always have the liberty. We have the liberty to accept his healing. We have the liberty to turn our back on him and destroy ourselves. God never takes our liberty from us. We're always free. Just like a doctor will not force the patient to accept his remedy, the patient can reject it. God will not force us to be well. But as he heals us and we gain greater and greater restoration of godliness and character, we gain greater and greater freedom. Think about as we violate God's methods and principles, we lose freedom. The person who eats at McDonald's every day and becomes 350, 400 pounds has lost freedom. They're not as free to engage in physical activities and life events as they used to be. The person who cheats on their spouse and is guilt-ridden and convicted has lost freedom. They don't feel as free to go places, even if the spouse doesn't know, they are under this constant worry and anxiety and dread. Sin robs us of freedom and liberty. It destroys us on any level. But as we come to God in his grace and he restores in us and heals us and regenerates us, we gain more self-governance. We gain more love for other people. Fear is purged out of our heart and we are set free as God originally designed us to be.
Well, listener, you have just come in contact with truths that can change your life, and I hope that you are internalizing this. This is amazing stuff. Dr. Jennings, our time is up for today, and I want to thank you for providing these insights for us. We have someone who called, and let's bring this person on real quick. Fred from Alaska. Fred, you have about 60 seconds. Can you share with us real quick?
Yes.
Go ahead, Fred.
Yeah, what? You want my question?
Yes, what's your question, Fred?
Why do we always say that we have to put ourselves down and others up when Christ said that we love others as we love ourselves?
Dr. Jennings?
Because of the internal insecurities and fears we have in our heart. And because of those fears, one of the ways we try to make ourselves feel better in this worldly way is by putting someone else down. It gives us the illusion of pulling ourselves up, but it ultimately only leads to our own worsening self-image and well-being.
Well, Fred, I appreciate your call. Thank you so much. I hope that answer refreshes your heart today. Thank you, Fred. He brought up a very, very important thing, that we need to demonstrate that we are capable of enjoying God's freedom by really being others-oriented, by really loving other people, as you say often on this program. Thank you, Fred, for that call. Dr. Jennings, again, thank you. Appreciate that. The website, comeandreason.com. That's Come and Reason, all one word, comeandreason.com. You can enjoy Dr. Jennings' blog. You can listen to these programs and ones in the past as well. And there are many resources there that can help you have a closer relationship with God. Until next week, this is Charles Mills, along with Dr. Timothy Jennings, inviting you to apply the simple solutions God placed in your heart today. Goodbye, everyone.
Simple Solutions is a production of Life Talk Radio and Dr. Timothy Jennings and is made possible by your generous support. For more information, visit www.comeandreason.com.